Good evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Here are some of the stories we are covering today, Monday, July 24th, 2017. President Kiir reconciles with Rebecca Nyandeng, the widow of South Sudan's founding father.
Kiir called me mom, then I'm a mom of all the people of South Sudan. And if I'm a mom of people of South Sudan, I will not leave them out. I want everybody to be included. I want a total peace, a comprehensive peace, which will bring everybody on board.
And IGAD ministers hold an extraordinary meeting in Juba to try to mobilize action on the 2015 peace deal.
We are going to talk with different parties from the government, from opposition, and all parties which they say that they are concerned upon these issues.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. A well-known South Sudanese politician says she has reconciled with President Salva Kiir. Rebecca Nyandeng says Mr. Kiir met with her in Kampala last week and that the two leaders have agreed to seek a solution to South Sudan's political crisis. Nyandeng says despite her new relationship with President Kiir, she will not return to the country. She says she will be in Juba when all the political forces in the country are united. The former advisor to Mr. Kiir says she sees her meeting with President Kiir as a positive step towards a real change in South Sudan.
It was President Salva Kiir who asked for reconciliation between me and him. And we did that before President Museveni. But we have seen that reconciliation between me and him. For me, I say that we don't have any problem. Our problem is how we can rescue people of South Sudan. And already President Museveni was working on the SPLM reunification. All these are search for peace, because things are getting from bad to worse in South Sudan. So it needs all of us to come together so that we can see how we can mend the fence. The question here is, how do we rescue South Sudan? That was the question that I asked myself.
And what was the answer to that question from the people who were present at the meeting, the former detainees, President Kiir, and the Ugandan President Yoweri Museveni? What was the answer to that question?
This is a fundamental question that you cannot go around it, but you need to face it upright. So everybody realized that the problem is there in the country and we need to rescue our country. But it does not need only a few people. It needs everybody to be included. So all of us have agreed. But we need to start from somewhere. Like now, we have to start like this. And then the rest of the thing will be done by President Museveni.
I understand that there was a talk about reunifying the SPLM, the ruling party. Is that what you are going to work with President Kiir and the former detainees?
We had the first meeting with President Museveni. This question came, how do we rescue South Sudan? And when the former detainees went to Entebbe, it came as the SPLM reunification. Why is the Arusha agreement was not implemented? If we are talking about the SPLM reunification, there is no problem about the SPLM reunification. And there were signatories to the Arusha agreement. So this we brought this thing to our attention, that, and everybody has agreed, why is the Arusha agreement was not implemented? So there is nothing that we say the reunification. We have already identified the problem. If you can see, the side which need reunification is the IO, which is divided now, and they were part of the Arusha.
When I looked at the pictures over the weekend, there was no representative from Riek Machar's party. Was there any communication with Riek Machar regarding the meeting in Kampala?
The meeting which is being conducted by President Museveni is coming on the 27th. This one was between me and President Salva, and then also we have included FDs. So it is us, and we realize that only me and President Salva and FDs will not resolve the problem of South Sudan. We have to look at the bigger picture.
Can you tell our listeners the basis of your new cooperation with President Kiir? You're telling me that you have reconciled with President Kiir. What are the terms of your reconciliation? Are you going back to Juba?
President Kiir called me mom. And if President Kiir Kiir call me mom, then I'm a mom of all the people of South Sudan. And if I'm a mom of people of South Sudan, I will not leave them out. I want everybody to be included. I want a total peace, a comprehensive peace, which will bring everybody on board.
How would you convince some doubting Thomases in South Sudan who would be saying, Mama Nyandeng, we will only believe that you have reconciled with President Kiir if we see you in Juba? How do you convince such people?
When they were doubting, what happened to them? Jesus Christ appeared to them.
So when are you going back to Juba? Let me repeat that question again.
When Jesus Christ appeared to me, then I will be back to Juba. I told you I need people. I want my people back. I want my people to be reunited. I want them to come together, and I pray John for that.
I don't mean to turn this interview into a religious discourse, but I'm asking a question that someone in Juba will be asking, that when is Mama Nyandeng coming to Juba to assure us that there is no problem between her and President Kiir?
We need to see that all the people who are aggrieved come to the table. South Sudan is my country. Why should I not go? But I will not leave all these children outside, and then I rush to Juba. What am I going to do with the big son when the younger children are outside the country?
That's Rebecca Nyandeng, widow of John Garang, South Sudan's founding father. She was speaking to me from the Kenyan capital, Nairobi, earlier today. The Intergovernmental Authority for Development, or IGAD, Council of Ministers, today concluded an extraordinary meeting in South Sudan's capital, Juba, aimed at reviving the country's 2015 peace agreement. As Waki Simon Wudu reports from Juba, the chairman of the meeting says the IGAD leaders are reaching out to all parties in an effort to bring lasting peace to the country.
The meeting follows a resolution passed at last month's IGAD Heads of State Summit in Addis Ababa that calls on the regional bloc's Council of Ministers to begin the process of resuscitating the peace deal. In its four-page communique released today, the Council of Ministers reiterated the IGAD's acknowledgement of efforts made so far by the Transitional Government of National Unity to implement parts of the peace deal, but also noted the continued fighting, the worsening humanitarian situation, and encouraged the National Dialogue Steering Committee to reach out to the opposition for its input. Ethiopian Foreign Minister Wakene Gebeyehu, who chaired the Juba meeting, says the IGAD ministers agreed to hold more consultations in September on how to revitalize the deal.
We are going to talk with different parties from the government, from opposition, and all parties which they say that we are concerned upon these issues.
But exiled rebel leader Riek Machar will not be invited to the next meeting of opposition stakeholders on revitalizing the peace deal, according to Gebeyehu.
In the process, all opposition groups, including Riek Machar's ideas, the representative of Riek Machar here can be represented in this process. For the time being, physically, we are not inviting the Riek Machar.
Continued fighting has led to further deterioration of the humanitarian situation across several parts of the country, including areas that were previously stable. Several analysts and an SPLAIO faction allied to Machar have said the peace agreement has collapsed and a new one should be renegotiated, something Kiir administration officials reject. The IGAD communique condemned the failure of both warring parties that signed the agreement to end violence. South Sudan Foreign Minister Deng Alor is calling on IGAD to better the implementation of the peace deal so the country can finally achieve permanent peace.
We want the council to continue, engaging the parties. Engaging the parties, confronting the parties with facts, pushing the parties to move forward and implement the agreement.
Other IGAD foreign ministers present at today's meeting include Somalia, Djibouti, Sudan, Kenya, and Uganda. For VOA News, I'm Waki Simon Wudu in Juba.
The spokesman for the National Democratic Movement says there is nothing new in the IGAD communique released this past hour in Juba. Emmanuel Aban says South Sudanese need an end to the fighting in the country and a new political settlement of the conflict. Aban says the regional bloc IGAD needs to chart a new political path for talks that includes all the opposition groups to find a lasting solution to the crisis in South Sudan.
There's nothing much new in it apart from the new agenda call for a new process to take place, which is called under revitalization of the agreement. They have not come out with a definition of what do they mean by revitalization, and there's no any paragraph that talks about that there's no renegotiation of the agreement itself. So we take it from there, and I think each and everybody has a right to interpret it. Any group has a right to interpret it the way they want to, but we in the opposition, we feel the agreement is dead and people need to move ahead so that the carnage and the suffering our people are enduring in South Sudan will come to an end.
But all of you claim, or all of you say, you are concerned about the suffering of the people of South Sudan, but you are adding more conditions and prolonging the process, which seem like to be endless. You know, it's not going to end. You're making new conditions every day. So is that going to end the suffering of the people?
Well, John, first look, in your program before I mentioned it, the war in South Sudan was imposed on the people of South Sudan by Kiir and his ethnocentric government. The people of South Sudan, including the revolutionary forces in the country, are only reacting to what is within their rights, you know, instead of self-defense. We have not imposed on any conditions. We have not put any preconditions for any dialogue. So I don't know when you say that we are putting on new conditions. I don't know what do you mean by that.
But you said the agreement is dead and people have to start from square zero. That's a condition. I mean, that's a statement.
Well, that's
you want everything
a condition.
To start from
we're
afresh.
We're just stating a matter of fact that the agreement is collapsed. You see, John, since the June 2016, the incident that took place in J1, Kiir abrogated the agreement. And if he had his principal partner to the agreement, chased out of Juba, being hunted in the bushes of South Sudan until he was saved in Congo, then in contract, the person who have signed an agreement with you, if he's no longer there, then the contract collapses. So we just stating a matter of fact. We're not telling you, we're not putting any preconditions. We're saying the agreement has collapsed, and it indeed has collapsed.
So let me use your word. You're saying that the process has to start all over again. If it is to start all over again, what are the issues that you want to talk about this time around?
What we are saying is this. We are saying that what is needed now is a new energy, a new initiative. There are some provisions, of course, in the agreement, the defunct agreement, that could be used as similar to what was done in 2005 when the comprehensive peace agreement was negotiated. The issue of right self-determination, if you remember very well, was enshrined and accepted by the government of Sudan in what was known as the Khartoum Peace Agreement and the Fashoda Peace Agreement. These provisions were accepted later on and used for the reaching of comprehensive peace agreement and became the cornerstone of the agreement. What we are saying is that there are provisions within the defunct agreement that could be used for reaching a settlement. What we are talking is this. First, before we talk about any having a democratic transformation in the country, we need to have a complete security sector reform in the country so that we ensure that the army, the security apparatus are neutral. The government now of South Sudan, and if you could observe from the recent visit in Uganda where President Museveni called for the SPLM to unify, was surprised that the chief of external and internal security are members of the SPLM. So in this way, you having institutions that are supposed to be neutral and safe and guard the country are under one party belonging to the ruling party. And this is a very serious threat to democracy and democratic transformation in the country. That's why we'll be calling for security sectoral reform as the main important issue. And we also call for constitutional process because up to now, we don't have a permanent constitution in the country. And this will require that all the stakeholders in the country should come on board and discuss the destiny of what kind of constitution they want for their country, and whether the presidential system that we have now and proven to be not working at all and proven to be a dictatorial, it is what we want to continue with it, or we should have a premonitorial or parliamentarian system in the country. So all these are issues that can only be debated in a new forum.
That's Emmanuel Aban, spokesman for the National Democratic Movement. He was speaking to me from Virginia this past hour. You are tuned to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Amnesty International warns thousands of rape victims in South Sudan are not getting the counseling they need. More on that when we come back.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today:
how would you spend your time if you did not have to worry about money?
Play golf.
That's what I would do. I'll play golf.
Because it's a leisure activity, and the people that play golf are usually the elites, and you can do bigger things with the money that you already have.
I'll be able to fulfill all my dreams. I'll be able to help the community around me, and I'll be able to help my family.
I would spend my time with the less privileged people, talking to them, hearing their problems and sharing experiences of life, and assist them with the basic necessary things.
The first thing I would do is look within my environment to see the issues, the problems that is faced by my community or by my environment, so that I can know where to come in to help the environment.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus. Amnesty International says thousands of South Sudanese women and girls and some men are battling with mental distress and stigma after being raped. In a report released last night, Amnesty said the aggravated acts of sexual violence against South Sudanese have been going on since December 2013. Amnesty International campaigner for South Sudan, Nyagot Tut, tells VOA's James Batty that sexual violence is being perpetrated by both government and rebel forces, and that victims are targeted based on their ethnicity.
The report details sexual violence against men, women, and girls. We spoke to about 168 victims of sexual violence, 16 of whom were men. And what this report details is just the prevalence and how consistent a feature sexual violence has been since the conflict broke out. Sexual violence is quite rampant. It has been taking place every time civilians have gotten into close proximity with armed actors. This has been committed by both opposition fighters and government fighters and all their various militias. And this is detailing violations that took place all the way from December 2013 to the present day.
You said the perpetrators come from both sides of the conflict. Are you suggesting these acts are being carried out by both government and rebel forces?
Yes. So this details violations, like I said, all the way from December 2013, in which armed actors from both sides, from the government forces and from the opposition forces and the allied militia, conducted sexual violence against women, girls, and even some men. So these acts, you know, have occurred alongside attacks in villages. So for instance, when government forces attack villages in opposition areas, they also conduct sexual violence in those areas. And also remember that these acts are not happening in isolation. So sexual violence has been occurring alongside other violations of human rights, including killings, including lootings and destruction of civilian property, including torture, a denial of freedom of movement. This has been ongoing, but also we've seen the ambit of other violations that have been carried out in the conflict.
I was not quite sure, but I read that you said thousands of South Sudanese women and girls and some men. Are you saying there are also sexual violence against men?
Yes. For this report, we spoke to 16 men who were subjected to sexual violence. Some of them were raped. Most of them were raped when they were in detention under government forces. So, for instance, under detention by the National Security Service. And some other men were castrated when government forces attacked their villages. For instance, one man that we have interviewed for this report, he was a blind man. And so when government forces attacked his village in 2015 in Unity State. He could not run, you know, along with the other villagers. And so he remained. And the government soldiers gave him a choice. And he chose to be raped, and the government soldiers raped him instead of killing him. Yes, you will also recall, so cases of sexual violence against men, especially in South Sudanese society, there's so much stigma. So there isn't that much knowledge or publicity around sexual violence against men.
That's Nyagwat Tut, Amnesty International's campaigner for South Sudan. She was speaking with VOA's James Batty from Juba. The SPLAIO Commissioner for Kajukeji County says South Sudanese officials continue to obstruct delivery of humanitarian assistance to IDPs in areas under rebel control. The SPLAIO officials say this is making the humanitarian situation more complex for thousands of people. Simon Peter Apiku has more for VOA from Kajukeji.
Nearly three-quarters of some 18,000 people who have decided to stay in SPLA-IO-controlled areas of Kejukeji are IDPs who fled in Ye, Morobo, Lanya, Juba, and other parts of the country. The IDPs are camped in three large settlements in Logo, Kerwa, and Adio. SPLAIO Commissioner Kenyi Eresto says the few non-governmental organizations helping IDPs and host communities from bases in Uganda provide health and education services as well as water and sanitation. But Eresto says none of them give the IDPs desperately needed food.
These camps were open since August last year. Till today, they did not receive any foodstuff.
Speaking to the UN Security Council in New York last Thursday, U.S. Permanent Representative to the UN, Michelle Sisson, said hunger has reached unprecedented levels in South Sudan.
More than 6 million people are now severely food insecure, half of South Sudan's population. 1.7 million people are on the brink of starving to death because aid agencies can't reach them.
South Sudan military spokesman Brigadier General Lul Rai Kong last week dismissed claims that IDPs are still in rebel-controlled areas.
We do not have IDPs in rebel-controlled areas. That's not completely correct. We know that we have South Sudanese refugees who crossed over to Uganda. They are mostly in Mangalatoria, on the Ugandan side of the border. So it's just another propaganda to fool the whole world that they have an area under their control with civilians.
Eresto says some organizations have said they are willing to distribute food to IDPs in areas controlled by the SPLAIO. He cited the incident a few months ago of an aid convoy organized by the UN Office for the Coordination of Humanitarian Affairs headed to Kajukeji that was blocked by soldiers as an example of the government's effort to starve civilians living in SPLAIO areas.
UN OCHA organized a convoy to come and deliver services here, more especially food stuff. They refused it to come in. And the non-food items by then was coming through Moyo. Also, it was blocked.
Pony Sara, an IDP at Kerwa Camp, west of Kajukeji, says Catholic and Anglican churches are trying to help, but the assistance is often irregular and not enough to sustain all the IDPs at the camp.
Things are not really easy because we are lacking food. Since then, just only little support from the churches, something like a kilo per person, which is not enough for the family, actually, for the whole month.
The IDPs in rebel-held areas of Kajukeji settled there before the SPLAIO captured the territory. At the time, the South Sudan government had an arrangement with the host communities to give them plots of land to construct houses. The agreement did not include land for farming, which means the IDPs must rely on relief food to survive. Sarah says the IDPs in Kajukeji would rather be internally displaced in South Sudan than flee to another country.
They want to stay because life in the refugee camp is very difficult, very hard life.
Sarah argues unless help arrives soon, she believes many IDPs will leave rather than face hunger in the camps of Kajukeji. Erastu says the international community should ignore threats from Juba officials and intervene to avert a humanitarian crisis in the area. For VOA News, I'm Simon Peter Piku in Kajukeji.
Three African nations will hold major elections next month: Angola, Kenya, and Rwanda. And though the three nations are very different, the stakes are high for each one, and all of the contests will be closely watched, as we hear from VOA's Anita Powell in Johannesburg.
First up is tiny, landlocked Rwanda, which will vote the first week in August. Once again, the undisputed favorite is the longtime president, Paul Kagame, who has ruled Rwanda since the end of the 1994 genocide. Horn of Africa analyst Mariti Mutiga of the International Crisis Group is expecting no surprises, but says the democratic exercise is an important one for Rwanda and its wealthy aid partners.
I think it matters to the extent that obviously there's been questions as to whether Rwanda is an authoritarian country, whether it respects the norms and practices of a democratic country, and especially as a major recipient of aid from the West.
In Kenya, the August 8th poll will be a tight contest between incumbent President Uhuru Kenyatta and opposition leader Raila Odinga. The European Union has decided not to send observers to Rwanda, but to deploy more than 100 observers to Kenya. Odinga's disputed loss in the 2007 election sparked weeks of political and ethnic violence across Kenya, taking the lives of more than 1,100 people. Since then, constitutional reforms have been implemented to prevent such violence. Mutiga says the August poll is a test of whether those reforms can hold.
This time, just as in 2007, the outcome will be close. The stakes are high for the candidates, and the institutions, especially the Electoral Commission, are struggling to cope with the huge responsibility on their shoulders.
Last is the oil juggernaut, Angola. On August 23rd, the Southern African nation will hold its first vote in decades without President José Eduardo dos Santos at the helm. The 74-year-old, who has taken several trips to Spain for medical reasons, is stepping down after 38 years in power. The poll itself is a straightforward two-way race between the longtime ruling party and the established opposition. Analyst Maya Bojon of business consulting firm Verisk Maplecroft told VOA that the real test will come after the election, when the new president will have to address slumping oil revenue, a foundering economy, and gaping inequalities. To do so, she says, the winner will have to untangle the complicated network of state resources, which remain largely controlled by President Dos Santos and his family. Anita Powell, VOA News, Johannesburg.
That's the end of our show for this Monday. We now leave you with the song Sudan by Lomerica Jasban.
Sudani Belgepi, the Africa, Sudani number one, the Africa, Mwakanita Sudani, Ketire. Gabayeta Sudani, say Ketire, Nina Pulu Apon, Ipon, Nina Pulu Nasiwa Ide.
We have been listening to Lomerica Jasban with the song about Sudan. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Thanks for listening. We would like to know what you think about our show. You can contact us by email at southsudan@voanews.com or find us on our Facebook page, also called South Sudan in Focus. Tune in again tomorrow evening for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Yeah.